Blog Talk Radio.
My love, ooh, my love, a winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. I thought about what I wanted, and you were on my list. Remember when I was in the desert with no love, no cactus, it's just us, and you swooped me from above. Oh. My love, I just want to say thank you for today, cause it is so good. Good morning, you got me feeling brand new. You got me feeling brand new. Like the text in lonely, like the text in lonely, jumping around in your bed.
Good evening, good evening, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for joining me on this wonderful, this beautiful day. Welcome to the Diamond V Experience on this beautiful Wednesday, April 22nd, 2015. So glad that you could be here and join me. Of course, I have to give a big shout out to my number one angel, my mom. I know she's listening. And I'd like to shout out my guest from last week. For those of you who may have missed 2 weeks ago, actually, the show, be sure to check out the archive version as soon as this episode is over at www.blogtalkradio.com/Diamond B Show. There you can also find some other past shows. If you may have missed any of those, feel free to peruse. I always have wonderful, excellent guests. I cannot complain, ladies and gentlemen. So I hope all is well with everyone who is listening, and have a fabulous, fabulous guest who is going to join us this evening. She is a Feng Shui Level 3 consultant, Reiki master, business coach, consultant, mentor. She is a philanthropist. She is co-founder of Colors of Freedom Foundation. She is the author of Karmic Alibi. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, please help me introduce my guest for this evening, Patricia Karen Gaggett. Patricia, you're on with Miss Diamond B. How are you doing this evening?
Hi, I'm fantastic, and I really appreciate allowing me to share my story with you and your guests and your listeners tonight. So thank you so very much. I'm really pleased to be here.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. You are so welcome. I'm glad that you can join me today. I love your bio, the energy that I get from it. I love the title. You know, it's so interesting. I guess, you know, the universe, it has this way of just tapping us on the shoulder. I actually was in Canada this past weekend.
Oh.
Yes, wow. Yes. I was in Toronto. Spent the weekend.
You were
in
very
Toronto.
Close by.
Yes. So I said, wow, look at the way that the universe just brings things together. And
yeah.
Also, you know, I see that you won the YMCA Peace Medal. I'm involved with the program at the YMCA, the International Service Program. So it's just wonderful. It's excellent just to be able to interview you this evening. I definitely would love to hear more about the book, love to hear more about your work. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Patricia.
I had a, thank you. I had a, the aha moment of life over and over and over and over, I think, as a small child. And then as I grew older, many different experiences and some pretty extensively difficult ones. And also, you know, taking a really good view at sharing some of these things with other people. And I've always had a feeling that we are here to serve people. And I've never for a single second not felt that way in my life. We're very much supported by, you know, the way that I was raised, and my father was very much that way. So I think I inherited that kind of a mentality and gene from him. So my life, you know, I wanted to be, and I am an artist as well as an author, and I'm very left side, right side. So I mm-hmm. always loved writing, and also yeah. as a career, you know, I got into finance and my own business. So I wore both hats on both sides of my head. Yeah.
Mad Hatter.
Yeah, Mad Hatter girl.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I definitely got a Mad Hatter vibe, but in a positive way, you know, Jane of all trades, and
yes.
definitely got that from you. You know, I mentioned some of your accolades, but the list definitely goes on. Certified meditation specialist, facilitator for applied mindfulness, transformative mindfulness, and mindfulness without borders. You know, you're wonderful. You're excellent. I love to see people who is able to delve in those different realms and be able to relate it all and bring it all together. And
like
I said, you know, the energy that I got from your bio, it was not of a person who is scattered or anything like that. It all comes together, all works together. And when you mentioned that, you had that feeling when you were a small child that we're here to serve people, I found that to be very interesting, because I tell people that they need to relate anything they do, no matter what they do, to their passion. And it's quite clear that your passion is serving people, and you found that out at a young age.
Yeah. You know, Hallie, when there's a very strong sense of belonging to family, and again, whether you come from a rich family or a poor family, it doesn't matter. Whoever is there in your circle, whoever is making up that village for you, you pay attention. And so for some people, they're raised, you know, a lot of times by their grandparents or have high influence by, you know, elders within the family. And yeah. in this day and age, we all desire and long for support or that person, the go-to person. And fortunate are some people who have a parent, an older sibling. In my case, I was 25 years old when my father passed away, and he was really, you know, one of the people who was most instrumental in forming the way that I wanted to see my life and be very balanced and have that opportunity. So again, whatever it is, in what direction you take, you pay attention, like you said. And I was, you know, the beginning of my book, Karmic Alibi, I actually start off by speaking about something that took place in my life, again, really early, you know, between the ages of 9 and 10. and I took responsibility for saving the world. That's really that's a pretty good start to your childhood.
And that is.
It was
early.
Yeah. So during the time of the Cuban Missile Crisis and Russia and everything, and there were many threats that there would be an atomic bomb, and I would go down to the basement of our house where I had set up my playroom, and I turned it into a prayer room. And I said, oh, my goodness, I have to pray to save the world. I mean, we cannot have a bomb. And I prayed to God, and I was on hands and knees, and I just said, I'll dedicate myself. I just know we're not supposed to die now. And I got up the next morning, and, of course, there was no atomic bomb, and everything was fine. And I really, really believed deep, deep, deep in my heart that I didn't care what anyone was going to say, how they negotiated, because that didn't matter to me. I felt that my voice had been heard, and I carried that with me forever. And even as I got older, I think that instilled this sense of belief in the power of your own voice, and that we are all important people.
Power of your own voice. That resounds for me. That comes out because I think sometimes we do play it small a lot of times in life, and I think that's many people's challenge is that they do play it small and they still try to figure out how to be the best them. But how is it possible for you to be the best you if you're playing it small?
And, remember how so many people have great ideas, and they go to people. They go to their teachers, or they'll go to their parents with this idea, and they're not supported. Or there's inefficiency in, the level of their ability to get a point across. And that can be demeaning for some children. For some children, they don't have the ability to walk away from a conversation and stabilize it in their mind and say, well, that's just that one person's opinion. No. When we're young, we respect the elders, and we believe that what they're telling us, is truth. And they form and shape how we form and shape ourselves, and we all know that. So being encouraged at the same time, there is a feisty gene. I believe we have a feisty gene inside of us. And if you tap into that feisty gene and you get away with it once, it's not ego. It's not ego. It's kind of like, okay, I did that, and maybe I can do it again. And I think for me, I tease, my sister, and she oftentimes says, oh, my goodness, I can't believe the things that you do, and I could never do that. And then I close my eyes, and I say, well, I can't do what you do. So, but definitely how encouraged we are, I think, it's important. But then holding really, really onto your own reins and saying, it doesn't matter what's come before me that's beat me up or put me down, I still believe we're all spectacular, incredible miracles that, whether you're, whatever religion you believe in, whatever your faith is, or even if you have no faith, but you're scientifically going to prove, you're still a miracle. Mm. You're still part of some glorious plan. And in that moment, we're all equal. There's equanimity around every single person, because you can't have one person not equal, because we've made each other. So we don't be putting me down because you made me. You're spectacular, and you think you're spectacular, so why am I not? So I really love being able to encourage people by telling some of my stories, and then hearing them with their own, well, I could never do that, or I can't believe that. And I just close my eyes and I think, you already have, you're listening. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful, beautiful, beautiful. Karmic Alibi, what a name, many times you don't even hear those two words necessarily in the same sentence. So tell us a little bit about how you derived at the name. And how that process was for you, and you making the decision to publish the book, and what was the particular aha moment, so to say, that made you say, now is the time for me to put this out into the universe?
You'll probably have to forgive me if I don't answer all of these together, but I will share that, first of all, I'll go back to, I was invited to attend Craig Doeswalt Rockstar Marketing Bootcamp in Los Angeles 4 years ago. And at that particular event, I listened to people who told their stories and they wrote books. And I really began to realize that I did have a life with a story and I could encourage people, and I needed to be able to say that in paper, on paper. So through Craig Doeswalt's Rockstar Marketing Bootcamp, I joined the mastermind, and it was through that I really was instilled with this desire or passion, you know, to become a writer. Karmic Alibi, I'm going to call it divine intervention. I've been, you know, a Roman Catholic. I've studied every religion. I've really truly wanted to know more about the mind and philosophy, and began to study, you know, different aspects of esoteric mystery schools. And I enjoyed studying Buddhism, and I found myself understanding a great deal about mindfulness and meditation, and then the words karma were always being flirted, you know, because of the teachings. And I would think, wow, you know, we make such excuses for everything, but maybe it's karma. And even if, you know, you're not going to believe in certain traditions or certain, you know, study books, etc., it still is something that you need to think about. And the more and more I began to think about my life, the words were truly divine intervention. It's like I woke up one morning and said, my book should be called Karmic Alibi. And literally,
oh, wow.
that's it. So, you know, we're looking for alibi excuses. And then I have a very good friend, Sharon, and Sharon, you know, sat with me and she said, it's what the book's to be called for sure. And we brainstormed a little bit about the tagline in Gaining Expedient Wisdom by Leaving Your Excuses Behind. So expedient wisdom is pretty quick if you have your aha moment where you realize that you've got to make a difference in this life. And yeah, you can have all the excuses you want. The more you want to hang on to those old excuses, the more that you're going to suffer. And in all of the things that we know about life, everyone suffers, but there is a cessation of suffering once you begin to realize that it is up to you to make that difference. And helping other people who suffer and helping them get past it really became important to me. And so I think I've answered all parts of your question, I hope.
Oh, no, you did. You did wonderful. You did an excellent job doing that as well, too. You did. And, yeah, you said you just woke up. It's just, you know, they call it spiritual alignment. That you just got up and, boom, there was the name. And, you know, that sometimes happens when we're on one accord and we're listening to the voice within, and we just get to that particular place. So I wanted you to just walk us through the book a bit about what the book offers. What would you like for people to take from the book? And, you know, you talked about the way you start off with that, you know, with a story of you being small. And I can imagine it's a bit of walking through different experiences that you've had in life from a small child to your adulthood. Also, I'm feeling that based on what you're saying and leaving the excuses behind, that Karmic Alibi takes you on a transformative journey.
Yes. Yes. And what I think makes me really smile is that I strongly want every reader, every person who I meet to be able to walk away just feeling, if there's a measurement, a decibel or a centimeter or an inch or a foot or a yard or a mile, it doesn't matter. I want them to walk away knowing that change is absolutely possible, and hope is absolutely what I want people to feel. And I think the most compelling feeling for me is that when I was writing the book, I actually had to relive, obviously, through some of the things that had taken place in my life. And when, you know, I tried to put them in an order that would take you up to where I am now, but not giving you all of the details and what the house looked like and what I wore that day and what I had for supper. I left a lot of that out. And I really take you strictly to the experience. And I created a character that attends with me sort of through at the beginning or at the end of this experience. And I call him the Wisdom Auditor. And I think that the Wisdom Auditor is the voice where if you are frustrated and you're disappointed, you're not really clear or have a lack of clarity on what you should do, then when you finish reading each chapter and you have to sit and listen or focus on what I experienced and then the fact that I got past it and I try to resolve using wisdom, using the voice within, and so that I took action and I'm living a life that irrespective of all of the things that happen, I am completely content with where my life is right now. And I live mindfully every single moment without judgment, allowing myself to be in full experience. And that's what I hope with Karmic Alibi. Not everybody will get it. Not everybody wants to. But if there is a person who is in need of just having that one more story, that one more person that can maybe understand them. I bring so many different aspects and levels through the book that I hoped, and maybe this is, you know, why we live and we go through certain experiences. I certainly felt that in this one lifetime, I've probably lived, you know, 20 lives because nothing I could ever have imagined one of these things happening to me, and I didn't actually embellish all of them in this book. I think some of them are very personal, and you know, they warrant me keeping them to myself. And then there's the ones that I think on a personal level, when I'm doing coaching and mentoring with people, sometimes there is a person who does reveal a situation, and I'm very close to it, and I will be able to share. And I come from a place of absolute understanding, and you know, what do we want at the end of the day? We want freedom from our frustration. We want freedom from our angry, you know, people. We want freedom to live, you know, in happiness and joyfulness, and to have camaraderie and equanimity with those around us, and whether it's in our job or in our family, in our marriage. So, you know, there's always room to have a good appetite for new information. And I think that I try to bring that with Karmic Alibi. And I'm working on a series right now called Mastering Life's Transitions. And I had created Inspired to be Rewired. And I wrote Mastering the Five Radical Degrees of Life, which are Risk, Root, Remedy, Realization, and Reality. And I try to walk through those in a really simple way that isn't going to overcomplicate, you know, because if we start talking about the brain and the cerebrum and the frontal lobal and occipital and the limbic system, not people can say, well, okay, I understand that's where my emotion comes from, but you're not helping me. So I've tried to take the complexity into of what it is into a language that people will be able to really, I hope, understand and be guided accordingly to the depth and degree by which, you know, they're prepared to do the work, because it's only up to each of us to do the work, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, wonderful. I love those five R's that you rendered. And also, as you were talking and you talked about some people not wanting to get it or getting it or the complexity to mindfulness. I think sometimes the word mindfulness alone, some people start to clench up or they get a little nervous about it.
I know.
And now for me, that's not the case because I grew up with mind science and, you know, the various silver mind methods, things like that, of that nature. So,
yeah.
You know, that those are closely related. Most people who study those, they also study mindfulness. But I think about other people, when they hear it, they're like, oh, no, mindfulness. You know, the name alone frightens them. But the way in which you present it on this call, you definitely make it very practical for those. And like you said, breaking down the complexity of it. And, you know, I think about with some of my friends, I get them to apply mindfulness. It's usually with someone that they don't want to talk to, someone they don't want to see, or someone who makes them nervous. I'm like, picture them 30 feet away from you. That's all you have to do.
So, that's great.
So in a way,
like
I'm being
that.
Serious.
Yeah,
so in
yeah,
a way,
yeah.
I'm being serious. But in my head, I'm like, okay, this is kind of like for me, it's a lighter approach to mindfulness per se. You know?
Yeah, that's great.
There's stuff in there to that whole concept of it. So like you said, being able to break down those barriers and talk to people about it, I think is big. And, you know, breaking down those five R's that you're talking about, which is going to be in your next series, I think is excellent as well, too. But
thank you.
Going back to, what you are talking about in the book and discussing transformation, people have to be ready to transform. And I wanted to ask you, because as you mentioned, it happens as a young child, but it definitely happens to adults as well. People have this great idea and they want to move forward with it. They take the idea to the wrong person or they share it with someone who they think is so close and is going to give them, you know, those great words of encouragement. And that's not always what happens. So I wanted to ask, when you were in the process of making the book, whatever process that may have been in, because I understand with writing, it takes so many different forms, and especially you're an international contemporary artist, so you probably have so many different layers to your creations. But when you did take it to someone, per se, was there ever a time in which you thought about, you know what, maybe I shouldn't do the book, maybe not now? And if not, what type of approach did you take so that you were able to cherish your baby, so to say? I think this is so big for so many people to hear this from you.
Wow, yeah, it's a fantastic question, and it's actually one I've not been asked, and I'm really appreciative of the depth by which you're thinking, you know, about this. So yes, as an artist, first of all, I look at a blank canvas, right? And I have to go to this place where, first of all, what would a person who wants to be an artist see? What is it that's in the mind? What place in the mind is there a vision or a picture? And because we work with our senses, of course, that happens to us where we tackle our emotions. So somehow through the work that we do on the canvas, we're expressing aspects of ourselves, aspects of our emotions that come up in different ways. So in writing a book, we tap into what I think is probably our memory. And some of us have very sad memories. Some of us have happy memories. And then the book, the papers, for me, were actually very similar to a canvas where I pre-thought where I'm going to start to do the work. I have a feeling or a vision, and I guess that's where I tackled it. The book was never not going to be done. In fact, I had started an original book, which I am finishing as well. It's a nonfiction, and I am actually working on it as you know, the next few months go by, along with Mastering Life's Transitions. But I believe that the work that anyone does, whether they're an artist, whether they want to write a book, whether they want to do a blog, or they simply even want to volunteer their time, and they're not really sure if they would have something to offer, I think put on those rose-colored glasses really quickly and put them reverse and see yourself. And you'll see how you look differently. You're the teacher, and yet you're putting those glasses on so that you see the way the students look at you. And all of a sudden, when you start seeing yourself through different eyes, you allow yourself to look deeper within, and you know that there's something more in a dimension of yourself that has that there is a higher and greater force that's just maybe out of sight, but it's there. And it, nonetheless, if you look, you will find it, and you find it in your art, you find it in your story, you find it in the words that you use when you're, you know, comforting someone who's not well. That's compassion. And in no matter what anyone says, unless you're out to write, you know, a really wild novel, which is completely different, But if you're really out to do something that's going to be in servitude to mankind, then it's going to come from a place of compassion, and you're going to be tapping into, as I said, that force that's just sort of out of sight. And that's the encouragement. That's also the place where there was never a feeling of me not wanting to see this come to fruition ever. And again, when as an artist, and I've been doing this now over 40 some odd years doing the art, I had been turned down by galleries. I was turned down by so many different, you know, I would submit my work to contests or just various things. And for years and years, I wouldn't make it. I wouldn't make it. And I thought, this is it. I'm just giving up. And then all of a sudden, there you go. You just submit a piece of work to something and it gets chosen. And that's almost like climbing Mount Everest. You know, you just, that's the seed that I needed to know that if there was one person who could appreciate, you know, just what I was doing, that was encouragement. And then those little encouragements, they add up. And then finally, you wake up one day and you say, who am I doing this for? Am I doing this for me? Or am I doing this so that I can get someone to, you know, give me some kind of a reward or tap me on the shoulder and tell me I'm wonderful? I didn't need that. And when you realize that it's that the process by which you're experiencing is the gift, then all of a sudden it changes everything. Now you start digging deep into your own sage, into your own wisdom, and the words that you're writing, they're for you. And if they can help somebody else, and if the job that you've chosen is going to also give you a sense of accomplishment, a sense of pleasure, a sense of doing something of value with your life, and it has the bonus of helping others, well, then it's just a total win-win. So the outcomes are really important. But, you know, to be rejected in this life, that's what the whole world is all about. And rejections get bigger and bigger and bigger. And, you know, to the point for some people, they become overwhelmed and they stop. One time for one person can be one time too many, where they put that pen down and they say, I will never write again. I am rejected. If that one person who I thought was going to, you know, make the difference because they're obviously educated and or have the you know, the ability to make a decision on whether I'm good or not, that is the worst thing that is out there in this world. Never, ever, ever stop. Not one single person in this world has the right to judge. And when you get that in your head, there's only one thing left, and that's appreciation. And you look for the people who can appreciate. Everybody's got different opinions. Not everybody likes to wear black. Not everybody likes to wear white. Right? So, yeah, we just...
You know, I love it. I love it. And especially that last part that you threw in there, because I don't know if anyone has any friends like mine. I have one friend, she loves to wear black. She just simply loves it, especially for a special event. It's like, okay, let's wear black. And then I have another friend who's like, let's do all white. Imagine we take a picture in all white.
Yeah. Well, I can relate. I can totally relate.
Yeah. So, I mean, and like you said, it goes back to those opinions and objections and rejections that people sometimes have, and just having to deal with it. You know, that I think that is, you know, some people might say, oh, that's pretty simple to say, no one can judge, you know, because we say it, but to actually think it and conceptualize it, like you said, you made me, you know, we were made by each other, you know.
Yes.
And it's so easy for us to say, oh, well, only God can judge me, or this person has no right to judge me. But then we turn to look for the satisfaction in other people, or we wait for the approval of others, and I don't care what that person may think. Well, what do you think I should do? You know, we turn around and ask that question to the people who so-called are the ones who opinion matters. So it's just really interesting to think about. And like you said, that deeper look into self, turning those rose-colored glasses around and looking deeper within. We're taught so many times just to look outwards and see the positivity that's in front of us. But what about what's inside of us and being able to draw that out?
Absolutely. And I think one thing that the world of, you know, technology has offered, and it really is a blessing in some ways, but it also can cause some angst for people, and that is that there's an overwhelm of, when you say positivity, that it's almost like an overwhelm of, you know, if you do this, this will change your life. If you do this, you will have whatever. But the deep work, to getting to the root of you know, what's holding you onto the craving for pleasure or the craving to be in pain, because that's true as well. Like, there are people who simply cannot release themselves from the pain because they don't know any other experience, or and they don't know how to become neutral. So I think that, you know, so at this stage of life, if people can begin to do, you know, more meditation or visualizations and start to take it seriously how they live their lives and do a little bit of homework around themselves, they will find multitudes of fantastic, fantastic programs and materials. But just to be mindful that those are great and they're great places to start, but inherently the work must be done on a deeper level. And that's when, you know, then you can't jump up and down and say, well, I paid $5,000 for this course and I'm still the same person. You know, I was supposed to walk away and become this person and it doesn't happen. Well, you know, sometimes that happens where we have an expectation that, you know, something is going to be the Band-Aid for us. But ultimately, no, it's not. You have to have a thirst and a desire to understand your greed, your cravings, and why you're manifesting things in your life the way that you are, and the conditions by which you're accepting those cravings as acceptable to you. So it's a complex life we live.
Yes. And you know, just as we begin to close, you know, this has simply been a great conversation, Patricia. I thank you once again for joining me this evening. You know, please let us know, if you could tell us about any, you talked about some of your upcoming projects that you have, but I know you do so many other things as well, too. You know, as I mentioned, you're co-founder of Colors of Freedom Foundation, and you sit on various boards as well, too. So what are some upcoming events? What are some things that you're working on that we should be on the lookout for, and ways that the listeners can support?
Wow, thank you. First of all, you know, just to I always want to believe that everybody who's listening or everybody who's crossing your path are part of your karma. So I always want to believe that there's a gratefulness. And that's the first thing I would say is I would love for people just to acknowledge and be grateful for their own work that they are doing on themselves. Karmic Alibi can be bought on Amazon if anyone is interested in the book. Betty Young's Books Publishing is the publisher of my book. And I'm working on my updating my website now. So it is www.inspiredtoberewired.com. And information will be on that website with respect to some of the programs and contacting me directly. So I think in probably the fall, in October, there will be a few announcements that I'll be making about the process of the manifesting, and I'm hoping that anyone who's interested will be able to, you know, get that information there. So thank you so much. I'm very grateful for having the opportunity again to speak with you, and I've enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
Wonderful. You are more than welcome. And if there's anything that you would like to say in closing, maybe it's those words that you want to say to that person who feels stuck or feels overwhelmed, what would you say to them, Patricia?
Well, I guess that we live in a sort of a metaphysical world, and we really try to look sometimes at things too complicated. And I always believe that if we can simplify things and take it right down to their true value, that will help us become much more skillful in our behavior and in the way that, you know, we ask questions, the way that we try to live our daily lives. So simplifying, really being mindful, taking and paying attention to what is actually happening in front of you and taking it to its truth and not camouflaging it with, well, I kind of wish that it would be this, or I want it to look like this, but it really isn't. And then acting for your own benefit in that truth and not shifting it so that, you know, you're amplifying what the feeling is that you would like to have, you know, instead of what it really is, and then dealing with it the way that, you know, will give you a better outcome, the process for you being much more, you know, level-headed or more realistic. So I just ask people to be mindful. I ask people to be grateful and to, you know, not judge other people, really not judge other people.
Yes, yes. Patricia, thank you so much. This has truly been a pleasure. Do come back to the Diamond B Show and update us on all the great things that you have going on. So once again, just thank you. I appreciate you, and I wish you nothing but the best.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Take good care.
Yes, take good care. Have a great evening.
Thank you.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, Patricia Karen Gaggett, author of Karmic Alibi. Be sure to grab a copy from Amazon.com and be sure to look out for some of her upcoming projects. Ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who may have joined on the line a little later, you can be sure to check out the archive version of this show. It will be available immediately after taping at www.blogtalkradio.com/Diamond B Show. Also, I just would like to tell you to be sure to join me once again next week for another great show with another great guest. With that being said, everyone, do have a blessed week, have a great evening, and do take care.